You're listening to Inside CHSL, the official podcast of the Detroit Catholic High School League. Inside CHSL is proudly sponsored by Alliance Catholic Credit Union. Here are your hosts, Brendan Johnson and Jeremy Otto.
Hello and welcome. Happy Catholic Schools Week from all of us here at Inside CHSL, the official podcast of the Detroit Catholic High School League. It is Catholic Schools Week where we celebrate, well, the whole point of this league, our great Catholic schools and schools all across the league, across the state, across the country and beyond are having festivities to celebrate Catholic schools and the mission of Catholic education. And it's so awesome to be sharing that with all of our Catholic League schools and to bring that spirit to our podcast this week. And it's a little teaser because next week, we're going to have a couple of great guests that will talk about Catholic Schools Week, the meaning of Catholic Schools Week, kind of a recap of Catholic Schools Week. So be sure to listen for that next week on our episode of Inside CHSL. This week is action-packed, though. A lot of great stuff going on across the Catholic League, and we've got a special exclusive interview that we'll dive into in just a little bit here as well. Jeremy Otto, if you're familiar with Detroit sports, you're going to be familiar with our guest that is on our podcast today. So we'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. But first, we got to start with our CHSL rewind. It was a busy week across the Catholic High School League, and there's a couple of notable points of emphasis. A lot of our rewind is going to be focused on the boys basketball side of things. Then we're going to flip it. And in the What to Watch segment, there's a lot unfolding in the girls basketball divisions, a couple of big games, seeding on the line, playoff implications. We're going to dive into that into our later segment of what to watch for this upcoming week. But first, like I mentioned, we go back to the boys basketball side of things. We start with now going to be the top seed in the Central Division. That is University of Detroit Jesuit. They clinched a share of the Central Division title this past week. And should they close things out the way they expect to, they will finish with the number one seed. But they have clinched the number one seed, I should say. But they've clinched at least a minimum share of the league title and still have an opportunity to win that outright. Also this past week, there was a thriller. Brother Rice, Orchard Lake St. Mary's. Orchard Lake St. Mary's still playing without Trey McKinney, but not to take any credit away from Brother Rice in just dramatic fashion, a win at the buzzer 66-64. That game, heavy impact, of course, on the league standings, the playoff brackets, and so forth. We'll talk a little bit about the Catholic League playoffs and the implications of the brackets a little bit later here in the episode. Also as well, in our What to Watch segment, we talked about the big AA matchup between Jackson Lemon Christie and Riverview Gabriel Richard. Riverview Gabriel Richard coming out on top with a victory there in pretty convincing fashion. In terms of state rankings, Riverview Richard, the only Division III team to crack the top 20 bar class, coming in at number 18 this past week. So a pretty nice job done there as well. Well, there was a lot to kind of run through in just a very brief summary of some of the boys' basketball happenings of this past week. We're nearing the end of the regular season. There's a lot of moving parts and a lot to still be determined with the boys' basketball playoff brackets. We'll talk about those a little bit later in the episode as well. But now, we have a very special, exclusive interview with Bishop Foley graduate John Keating. He is with Jeremy Otto. If you follow Detroit sports, Fox Sports Detroit, Bally Sports Detroit, FanDuel Sports Network, if you've watched any of those networks as they've covered Detroit sports, you're familiar with John Keating. He's a Bishop Foley graduate, and he's going to talk about his Catholic League experience and ties, some of his mentors, his career in broadcasting, and after an illustrious career, his now near retirement, and as he closes out his broadcasting career. And Jeremy Otto had the opportunity to sit down exclusively and talk with him all about that. So here's Jeremy and John Keating now.
All right, John, we appreciate you joining us here today. Kind of want to take this in parts. I guess, first off, kind of going back to your Foley days. I guess what sticks out there for you?
Well, I guess that I survived it, mostly because the drinking age was 18 back then, and that just I shudder to think of what we survived back then. But just still great pals that I have today, and my professional travels took me to Grand Rapids and then Denver, and then to come back where where I grew up, means a lot. And so I had occasion recently where I was going to meet my colleague Johnny Kane in Royal Oak. And so I drove through the neighborhood where I used to deliver the Detroit Free Press back in the day, and it just kind of hit me that all those homes that I was bringing the newspaper to, might be watching me on TV these days, and it was a cool moment.
I guess kind of piggybacking on that, did you think about being a writer, back in the day or?
Well, I mean, writing is always something that I've enjoyed. And my teachers at Bishop Foley were terrific in that regard. Alex Hart was our writing guru, I guess. But all of the teachers, they're all very caring, and when I got through Bishop Foley, my wife went to public school. And we moved to Denver, and we thought, well, the kids don't have to go to Catholic school. We see lots of kids turn out okay. But when you become a parent and you have kids of your own, you know how special the education is to take them through the Catholic school system. And so the kids went to grade school at St. Hugo, and then the oldest went to Brother Rice, the next one went to Sacred Heart, the next one went to Marion, and they've all turned out okay in spite of the parenting that they've had.
Yeah, what did they experience, I guess, while in school? Did you kind of see that go full circle too?
Well, most of the kids in Catholic school are there because they want to be, not that they have to be. And I think there's a difference in public school education to private school education in that regard. Not that there's anything wrong with public school education. I just felt, I mean, I it's a lot. I guess the push to make sure kids do their best is a little more evident there. And I remember at St. Hugo, and looking back at it, it probably wasn't the case, but you wanted to make sure in your seventh and eighth grade years that you had the grades to qualify to get into Brother Rice and Sacred Heart and Marion. And then that set you up to get into college. And the first two kids went to Notre Dame. And the third one went to Grand Valley, where I went. She and I think we're the smart ones in the family because of our choice of Grand Valley. But actually, she had been accepted at Marquette, but my wife was going through breast cancer treatments then, and she wanted to stay closer to home. So good soul that she is.
I know, what you spoke about your teachers earlier. I know one of your favorites was Chuck Gumbel. He obviously, unfortunately, left us too soon, just a few days ago. But, what made him your favorite teacher?
Well, he was, he was certainly one of them at Bishop Foley. And when I look back upon seeing of his passing, reflecting back to the teacher that he was, he just allowed us to be young adults. He treated us as people about to enter adulthood, and that meant everything to teenagers who are trying to figure stuff out. And I just remember how he respected us as people, even as he gave us grief in class, which was part of, I think, growing into adulthood. Some of the teasing that that existed, and beyond the fact he was just a great communicator and a great teacher, and also caring for how we were going to turn out, just meant everything to those of us at Bishop Foley.
Did you have a moment in high school where you're like, oh yeah, I want to be a broadcaster specifically, or is there an experience? Obviously, I had the lucky chance to do it for 4 years and call hundreds of games by the time I was out of UD. But did you have anything like that at Foley?
Well, the story that I've told many times, it was long before Foley. I was actually about 10 years of age, and The Kid Next Door, this will predate you and most of your audience, but 1,000 years ago, you could buy a kit. I think it was made by Heath. And so basically you were making a radio. You were plugging in the old-fashioned tubes into this radio and building this radio. And I remember we put the last tube into the radio, and this voice came out of the radio. And I think it was probably WJR. I don't know. We, you know, I grew up listening to WJR every morning, and it was JP McCarthy, who was sensational on the radio and a terrific interviewer. But that was the moment where I just thought, wow, that is so cool that a voice somewhere else is coming out of this box that's sitting in front of us. And I sort of carried that with me into high school. And then I enrolled for you know, no particular reason at Oakland University, and God bless the Golden Grizzlies, but they didn't have the broadcasting program that I wanted. And as luck would have it, my dad got transferred to Grand Rapids right before I started college, and so I moved from even before classes started to Grand Valley, which had a 10-watt radio station, and it took until my second year to muster up all my courage and walk into the radio station and say, "Boy, I'd like to be on the radio." And, you know, 10 minutes later, they had me doing the news. And so it was really the moment that changed my life.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case for a lot of people. The moment you're kind of thrust into, you know, it in the industry is maybe the best as you kind of learn on the fly. So I dug up a picture. I think it was from your Distinguished Alumni Award with Foley. You had a mullet. How long did that last?
Well, we all did. I mean, I, you know, I would long to have some of that hair back then. And you know, that was, I guess, that was the style back then. And I was the, you know, the class president in 1975, which is, geez, our 50-year anniversary is coming up this year. And we had a terrific group of kids, and you know, I think almost all have gone on to do great things. And as mentioned, we've stayed in touch. Some of the guys I played basketball with have stopped by the set at the ballpark, and you know, great to take a picture with them and see those guys again. But it was it really sort of you know, the biggest part of growing up, Jeremy, I think, is when you develop some swagger, when you have some degree of confidence in in yourself. And even before the Venturian Award, which was lovely and very nice to get, maybe, oh geez, it's probably been 8, 9 years ago, I was asked to give the commencement address at Bishop Foley. And that was my message to them, was find your confidence. And at that point, once you believe in yourself, you can go anywhere and do anything, but it's all up to you. Don't pay attention to the, you know, to what's happening outside. My own theory is the world is divided between people who are secure and insecure, and the ones who are secure, who like themselves, don't really care about what other people are thinking or saying or any of that kind of stuff. And some of that was developed at Bishop Foley.
You know, the industry can obviously be fairly cutthroat in a number of ways. And, you know, I think how you treat other people can make you stand apart in and itself. I mean, how much did you learn from your Catholic school and, you know, upbringing, I guess, on how to treat people, not only just in everyday life, but in, you know, a tough business as well?
Well, it's everything. I mean, and I would give credit to my parents who instilled in that in us. And you know, you were raised to be treated how or to treat others how you wanted to be treated, and you carry that with you through life. And I've tried to do a pretty good job of that. You know, just out dealing with with people, and you know, those that you know, who may have seen me on TV over the years. It's you know, it's an honor that they want to say hello. And but all of that, I mean, it's just it's there's a goodness within the Catholic school system that stays with you. And it's you know, it's how you treat your classmates, and it goes on from there.
Is there one thing you didn't appreciate, you know, while you were going through school that you're like, wow, that actually, you know, was something that I learned from?
Well, I guess I didn't appreciate the writing that you're forced to do as a high school kid. But it became really who I am. I kind of determined that it set me apart from some of the other people, and still does, some of the other people in broadcasting. I like to write. I think there's a dearth of writing. I know people are rolling their eyes because of all the dad jokes that are perceived. I just think they're great, twists of a phrase. But it's all of that in how it's presented. And so I would guess it's the writing that I was able to do at Bishop Foley, and took that to Grand Valley, and then into my jobs in Grand Rapids and Denver.
You kind of talked about your radio backing, and I know that was kind of your focus. At what point was it TV that you shifted to?
I was doing all right, here's the story. So I'm doing involved with the college radio station at Grand Valley. It's a 10-watt radio station. But it's all I want to do. And so I went from being the occasional on-air voice, and then my junior year I was the news director, the senior year I was the station manager. And while I was the station manager and taking classes, I got the chance to work at a radio station in Grand Rapids. They already had one person named John on the air. My middle name is Patrick, and if I was going to have an on-air name, I had decided it was going to be John Patrick. The other guys, whose name was John on the air, was named John Petrick, so that was out. And so they just bestowed upon me the name Steve Knight. That became my on-air radio name at this radio station. And so I went from being the midnight disc jockey 2 nights a week to I knew that I wanted to get into news, and so I got the morning news job at this radio station in Grand Rapids. And while I was still doing that, maybe a year into doing that, I got a chance to be the weekend anchor at the TV station just down the street from the radio station, so Channel 13 in Grand Rapids. And so I knew I couldn't keep the two identities separate, and so I was Steve Knight on TV and doing radio at the same time. And so for a year, I was working Monday through Friday mornings on the radio station, and then Saturday night and Sunday night at the TV station. So worked 7 days a week for a year. And I tell everybody, it's just like, if you want to get into it, if you want to be on the air and do what you love, you've got to eat dirt. And that's our expression. You would eat dirt to be on TV or be in the radio. Be on the radio. And so we sort of established that, and then went from there to TV in Denver.
Was there any thought about continuing the Steve Knight name in Denver, or that was kiboshed as soon as you moved?
Yeah, I knew I would go back to my real name as soon as I got to the next job. And so it was the tricky part of that was everybody I worked with at the TV station knew that I had a different name, but once you're introduced to somebody as something, that name sticks. And so I was always called Steve, or those that knew me well called me Slash, because I was John Slash Steve, or Steve Slash John. But I knew when I got to the next gig, I'd go back to my real name. The tricky part was cashing checks in Grand Rapids, because the checks were made out to my real name, and I would get recognized in the bank, and I'd have to show ID because they didn't understand why this guy named Steve was cashing checks for a guy named John.
Sounds like quite the ride. I mean, I know obviously you spent some time in Denver, but was it kind of always your goal to come back here to Detroit at some point?
We love Denver. It was not the goal. Where our kids were born there. I sort of graduated, moved up the chain to the point where I was the main sports anchor at the CBS station in Denver. But as can happen, we had a couple of management changes, and so my contract was up, and the new boss pulled me into his office on a Tuesday, completely unexpected, and told me that my contract was not going to be renewed. And I was absolutely gutted. But my message to everybody younger than I is that what you think is your worst day can turn out to be your best day, because that's right about the time when people started watching ESPN and cable sports began growing. And so it got me out, ultimately, it got me out of a TV newscast into a regional sports network just as they were taking off and growing. And so I looked at that absolutely crushed, and it turned out to be the best thing that could have happened to me. And to come back home is certainly a bonus with family here.
How much did you rely on, just your faith, I guess, during that time as well?
Well, lots. I mean, it's a test, and I'm confident enough, and I figured I was smart enough that I could leave this TV thing behind. I could do other things, but you're generally drawn to what you're good at or what you enjoy most. So while I was looking at some other things, the opportunity came back to work for Pass, which was the precursor to Fox Sports Net and Bally, and then now FanDuel. And then we had just moved into a house in Bloomfield, and about maybe a month in, the newspaper came to the driveway and it said, Fox Sports buys the rights to the Tigers and the Red Wings. And I thought, what have I done? I finally moved my family from Denver to Detroit. And there's no guarantee that I'm going to be kept on. I had a year and a half on my contract left, so I knew I had some fallback, some security blanket there. But there was no guarantee that this new entity was going to keep me until they got to the point that their first game with the Red Wings rolled around and they needed somebody to host the pregame show on their first Red Wing broadcast. And they were in a bit of a scramble. And so since they owned my contract, my boss, who had given me no assurance that I was in their plans, said, all right, come on over and do this game. We'll see how it goes. And so I was the first voice on Fox Sports Detroit with no guarantee that I was going to have a second day beyond that. And that was 28 and a half years ago.
I think to a certain extent in this industry, we're kind of taught to be immune to obviously, being around the people that we're around and, covering the things we're covering, because if you're too fanboy about it, it doesn't all come together like you'd like. But I mean, moving back here after you were so many years deep in your career, was it like, wow, this is kind of the cool kid in me again that I'm covering things in Detroit that I grew up watching?
Absolutely. And chief among them was the fact that Ernie Harwell was doing the broadcast for Pass. It was in that span in which he had been let go by the Tigers and then brought back after Mike Ilitch bought the team. And so in that middle part, he was doing TV for Pass Sports. And I remember thinking just this awareness, it's just like, well, I can't work with Ernie Harwell. Ernie Harwell's way up there. But he could not have been more welcoming, more genuine. I mean, and that's true for everybody in Detroit. The fact that I got to know Al Kaline, in his Willie Horton, the people that I grew up watching, Mickey Lolich and Denny McClain. I would see saw Denny McClain at during this past Tiger season. So I mean, those were sort of pinch me moments for a kid who grew up in Detroit, getting a chance to be around heroes and for them to know who I am.
What's the biggest thing you took away from Ernie?
Well, I guess his humility. It's a story that I've told, that we were in Milwaukee and came back to the hotel, and I saw Ernie walking, and I said, where have you been? And he said, oh, I just had some lunch. Oh, do you know people here in Milwaukee? No, I just met some Tiger fans and they invited me to have lunch with them, and so I joined them. And it's just, that's who he was. He just had a birthday. I think he would have been 105. But the fact that that Ernie was so down to earth, I think, came through in the broadcast. And that's why he was the best. And one of my favorite days was when he took us to a deli in New York City. Just sort of showing us the ropes of what it's like to be on the road for as long as he's been on the road.
What's your favorite city to travel to? Do you have one just over your time covering games?
Yeah, I'm often asked that question, Jeremy. It's been Vancouver, I think, with the Red Wings. Just a beautiful city with the ocean and the mountains, and then after that, Seattle, I think, for somewhat similar reasons. And then you get into the Chicago. I've been to 1,000 times, and Boston. I spent plenty of time in New York City, and God bless the people there, but if you've been there a handful of times, that's probably enough.
Obviously you announced your re retirement earlier this year I as well. I guess when did you know that, I'm retiring now and that's kind of the final straw to it, or did you go back and forth at all?
Well, we did go back and forth, but I decided at the middle of last baseball season, and I mentioned that in the announcement, just before Christmas. That it seemed like with the world changing in terms of regional sports television and all of that, and boy, if I could get one more Red Wing season in, that would be great. And once I had that conversation with myself, I started thinking of, all right, well, get through the Tiger season. And so I had a conversation with my boss, and he had very graciously told me a couple of years before, you tell us when you want to be done. You've earned that, which in this business just doesn't happen. And so talked about it with him, and he said, well, if you're thinking about that, you have to say something. And I said, something to who? And he said, to me. And so I talked about it with my wife for another couple of days, and then told him, it's just like, yeah, let's get through baseball season and then get through the Red Wing season and then be done. And then when the Tigers were going so well down the stretch, and it was so much fun, I certainly didn't want to say anything then. But it was very emotional, the last home game that I did at the ballpark, because no one knew but me and a few of those closest to me that it was going to be my last game at Comerica Park. But I knew that the wing season was coming up. And but as I walked out to my car after the last Tigers game, it was just a few heavy sighs, I guess.
You kind of talked about how nobody's able to kind of call their shot in terms of when they're going out. Does that make it a little bit easier, maybe knowing that this is the finality? This is my final Tiger game. This will be my final Wings game, maybe whenever that comes as well.
Yes. Because in this business, and similar to the story I just shared about Denver, I mean, somebody can tap you on the shoulder in this business at any time and just say, you know what, we're going to go in another direction, and you're leveled. You just are. And so the fact that I was able to call my shot in this regard, enjoy the last the last few months, even though I'm putting up with Chris Osgood, gives me the chance to sort of, take it all in, I guess. And so, we're sort of counting down how many games I have left. And but in light of in light of where we are and where I am, and with family on the west side of the state, we have a great house in Grand Haven, right on Lake Michigan. I love being there, and it just seems like it's a perfect time to do this and get there before I'm too old to truly enjoy it.
Will he allow you to keep one of those ties with your face on it? Do you want one of those?
Well, he keeps them all. I don't know. There's a handful of them. I actually had some made up with his face on it, wearing a necktie with my face on it. I got a couple of those. But he wore one, just last night. That's an all-timer. It was from the Grand Rapids days with the bad Ron Burgundy mustache, and so we got a lot of laughs about that.
And how did that originate? Did he literally just show up one day with your face on his tie?
He's a goalie. They're not hooked up right. They're just not hooked up right. So yes, he showed up with my face on his tie, and then it's gone back and forth. So to the point where, I had his face put on the scoreboard at Comerica Park, and on the billboard outside Little Caesars Arena, and then at the Fox Theater. And then a couple of years ago, I think it was, I pulled some strings, and we got his face on billboards along, the lodge and the South Field and atop the Greektown Casino and all of that, and just sort of constant needling each other. And so I think I think people appreciate the relationship that we have, where we just love to give each other grief. Someone recently said, "You're like an old married couple, just having some laughs at each other's expense."
Are you done after Wings? I mean, could you see yourself filling in?
No, I cannot see myself filling in, nor do I think they would want that. I mean, it'd be honored. I'd be honored if they asked or if there was a need. But I firmly understand that, everybody moves on in this business. And as long as I've been here, Jeremy, I get that, once you're gone, and it was true in Denver. I mean, I was in Denver for 12 years. You're gone for 6 months, and people say, "Oh yeah, I think I remember when you were there." And I mean, you look at, Dave Llewellyn had a terrific career in Detroit, and Bernie Smailovitz just wrapped up a terrific career in Detroit. But once you're out of the spotlight for a while, people kind of move on, and I fully understand that, and I get that completely. And there are no illusions about sort of hanging on to that. There is some talk, some very frightening talk about Ozzy and I pursuing the podcast world that you're now immersed in. We'll see. There's nothing official to announce there yet.
Gotcha. That's exciting. Kind of as you look full circle on everything, picture yourself senior year at Foley or something, and you're able to look into the future and you see what you've done throughout your career. Maybe yourself as a father, as a husband. What do you think your thoughts would have been back then?
Well, you don't know what you don't know. Back then, you're putting one foot in front of the other. Like I said, I unlike a lot of people, I had this notion that broadcasting was going to be for me. I think a lot of kids go to college, that they get through high school, they go to college, they don't yet know what they want to do until they find something in one college class, or in one high school class. I knew fairly early on. The fact that I was able to sort of put it together, there's a lot of God's will involved in there. I mean, there just is. I mean, right place, right time, getting to know the right people. I guess the nudge I would give to any of the younger people listening to this is, the world is filled with people that know who could help you if you allow that to happen. The world is filled with just finding someone who who knows somebody else that can put you in touch and sort of direct your future. So I was lucky in that regard to be able to to get some stuff together. There was one of the guys that was 2 years ahead of me at Bishop Foley. His name is Tim Steele. Had gone to Grand Valley, and I knew he was on the radio at Grand Valley and had gone into radio in Grand Rapids. So when I realized that the broadcasting curriculum at Oakland University at the time wasn't right for me, Grand Valley was a place that I knew a Bishop Foley guy had gone and had success. And I got a couple of Facebook messages from Tim fairly recently. He's gone on to work in TV and in Portland behind the scenes. But I mean, those are the the people that you bump into that can have the ability to shape your future.
I guess last one, as you look towards what is, a career that's winding down at this point, what's that last one going to feel like? Any idea?
I don't know. I really do not want, well, I mean, I can answer the question. I'm going to be a puddle. I know that about me. I mean, giving, speeches at my daughter's weddings, those kinds of things, you stand up and then all of a sudden the floodgates open. But I'm blessed. I've got no, I guess no bad thoughts about, going out in this way. The fact that I've been able to do it in this town for as long as I have, it's just been an honor.
Well, John, we appreciate you joining us here and have fun on your ride. And it's been cool to kind of hear the backstory of your high school days as well.
Yeah, I appreciate you asking, and you know, it's great to look back on my Catholic education, and hope other people take full advantage of it as well.
That's John Keating. Brendan, we're going to send it back to you.
When you choose where to bank, do Catholic schools benefit? When you choose Alliance Catholic Credit Union, they do. Do business with a business that cares about the Catholic community. Join Alliance Catholic Credit Union today. Apply online in minutes at alliancecatholic.com. Alliance Catholic Credit Union is a proud sponsor of the Catholic High School League.
And we at Insight CHSL want to personally thank John for his time with Jeremy and joining us here on this episode of the podcast. Great stories, great memories, and talking about his mentor, talking about his experiences. Just truly special to hear all of the great words from John Keating, and we appreciate all of his time in joining us on the episode this week. Now it's time for our What to Watch For segment. A lot happening this week, which means next week's going to be action-packed as we recap Catholic Schools Week, and we're going to have a lot of stuff in our rewind to talk about. It starts with the wrestling championships. They are on Saturday, February 1st, and those are something that we're definitely going to have great coverage on. Hopefully we can get a couple interviews with the coaches and some of the athletes that walk away with Catholic League championships on Saturday the 1st. In girls basketball, mentioned this in the early part of the show. There was a lot to talk about there. There's a couple big games. St. Mary's, Mercy. This will determine seeding for the Catholic League playoffs. Mercy has to win by 3 points to clinch the number one seed, and they would then host Notre Dame Academy. Second place in the league has to travel to Father Gabriel Richard for the Catholic League semifinal. And, of course, that's not a place you want to have to play. It's not a team you want to have to go against either. A very talented Father Gabriel Richard team. We've certainly been talking about them quite a bit on the podcast this year. So certainly going to be interesting to see how things fall there. Mentioned boys basketball playoff brackets. They've been released with all TBD at this point still, right? We're still in a process of seeing where things fall, but I can tell you that the Catholic League quarterfinals for the boys will be on Saturday, February 8th. Then you have the Catholic League semifinals on Tuesday, February 11th. And then you have the Catholic League Boys Championships for the Central Division on Friday the 14th. The other two on Saturday the 15th. We'll be able to talk more about those next week as the league season comes to an end. And we kind of have seeding figured out on where everybody's going to fall. But this is going to be a pretty eventful week with all the different matchups, to see where people fall, to see the matchups you get in the brackets. It should be pretty exciting. And finally, we have the Catholic League Ski Championships as well. That'll happen next week before we record the podcast. Those are at Alpine Hill on Monday, February 3rd. Marion and Orchard Lake St. Mary's looking to defend their most recent Catholic League Championships. We'll be able to have an update on those on next week's episode of the podcast as well. Busy week, and a busy week upcoming across the Catholic League. We look forward to breaking all of that down next week. This week, you know, the early segment was short because there's still so many moving parts and there's so many games upcoming that it's a lot more of what we're watching for, what we're going to be able to break down next week, and we're really looking forward to that. Again, a special thank you to John Keating for joining us on this week's episode of the podcast. And before you go, make sure you give us a follow at @insight_CHSL on X, formerly known as Twitter, and hit that subscribe button. Wherever you're listening to the podcast today, go ahead, hit that subscribe button. Helps us, helps you get the content quicker as soon as it comes out. So make sure you do that before you log off today. And again, thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time here on Insight CHSL.